The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford, 1 mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway on the east side. 0% APR for 72 months on new 2020 Fords, 0% for 84 months on 2019 Fords. Get to BillCurryFord.com. The end of the month is here. This is the weekend to buy at Bill Curry Ford. These tremendous offers through Ford and through Bill Curry Ford. They will not last forever. Celebrate the recovery at Bill Curry Ford. Big Storm Beer is the official beer of the Ira Kaufman Podcast. Where can you find Big Storm Beer? Go to BigStormBrewery.com and click on their Storm Tracker, or you'll find it at JoeBucksFan.com. Big Storm Beer tap rooms are in Odessa and just south of Ulmerton on 49th Street, the flagship location. Fantastic food. You can order delivery, pick up, or dine in. Big Storm Brewing Company, Tropic Pressure Florida Ale, the Wavemaker Amber Ale, their original, or the Bromosa Tangerine IPA. See the whole family of beers, Big Storm Beers, at BigStormBrewery.com. Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, everyone, welcome back to the Ira Kaufman Podcast featuring the sage himself, Mr. Ira Kaufman, the Baron of Big Storm Beer, the King of Pasco County, Uncle Ira, the sage, baby, as Derek Brooks now calls you full-time. I'm Steve Isbitz, a Joe Bucks fan. Lee DeKemper is here. Ira, we got so much to talk about. We're going fast. We're going furious. How are you, man?
Feeling upbeat. Things are opening up. Safely, I might add. Safely. For instance, the last two Saturday nights, we went to a restaurant in downtown Newport Richey. We had the whole restaurant to ourselves. Not another soul. Now, they got a chef in there. So it's not like a little five and dime. The guy's a good cook. And, of course, we got our own waitress. We got our own chef. Nobody around. No coronavirus concerns whatsoever. It's been fantastic. Now, I don't expect it to be empty going forward, but things are loosening up, gentlemen, and it's a welcome sight.
Well, Ira, of course, your podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford. As we heard in the opening, the end of the month is here, and some of these incredible 0% offers are winding down. BillCurryFord.com, or get on the phone right away to Sean Sullivan, general manager at Bill Curry Ford. Email them. They'll chat right on the website and help you out. You don't want to miss out if you're really looking for a new vehicle, and especially if you don't want to make a payment until 2021. Sage, I know you didn't watch any of the golf match. I know Lee didn't watch it, but there was one little comment in there that was kind of funny. It's just a Bucks kind of thing. Brady, you know, it was raining, and they were talking to him, and they weren't necessarily talking about the weather, but he, on his own, said, you know, this is the kind of day where you really like to hand the ball off. And I'm thinking to myself, who are you going to hand it off to, Tommy? This isn't New England anymore. It rains in Tampa. Yeah. You better be able to throw that ball come 6 o'clock on a September night.
Steve, I did break down, and I did watch about an hour or hour and a half of the golf. I missed his eagle, you know, from the fairway, which was fantastic. And I missed the beginning when I guess he was awful. I did see a good bit of it. And speaking of the Bucks running game, and this is directed exactly towards Mr. Lee DeKemper, and I know it's driving him nuts because it's driving Buck fans nuts, but not a day goes by when people aren't writing about Devonta Freeman, his availability. He's sitting there. People think he's going to be retired. He sent out a Twitter, I'm not retiring. Screw you all. I'm going nowhere. He wants to be paid. Understood. But he's a guy that Lee's brought up on this podcast several times. He's out there, and I think on a situational basis, he can help. I think his days of 18 to 20 carries are over. I think Lee'd agree with that, but that doesn't mean he wouldn't have value for the Tampa Bay Bucks, Lee.
Well, I've been saying that for the longest time, but I've come to the conclusion the Bucks don't believe in a running back. They don't believe in a run, and if they go down in the ball of flames because they can't run the ball, oh, well, there's always next week, or there's always next year. It's getting to the point that I'm even tired of talking about it. And, like, if the Bucks is blind, well, you know, it's sort of, you know, I was talking to our good friend Sean Sullivan, the general manager of Bill Curry Ford, the first family of Ford today. And he was screaming at me about why the Bucks don't get Cam Newton. And it, you know, dawned on me, well, number one, we all know why, Arians doesn't want any backup to be even remotely considered in a controversy. He should start over Brady or James or whomever's starter. And as I'm telling this to Sean, the light bulb goes on my head. You know what? I could sit here and talk to him blue in the face that the Bucks need a running back, and they're going to dig in their heels, and no, we don't. Having said that, Greg Rosenthal of NFL.com, same umbrella, he came up with a fantastic idea. Obviously, Aarons believes more in a not a running back, but a catching back. That's what we used to call your buddy Charles Sims. So Greg Rosenthal, he threw out Rex Burkhead, who is in the last year of his contract with the Belichicks, only makes $2.5 million. He knows Brady. Brady knows him. They're on the same page, sort of like what we talk about with Gronk and Brady. I'm like, this is why Greg Rosenthal writes for NFL.com. That's a heck of an idea. I don't know if the Bucks will see the light, but there's a great backup running back, or excuse me, catching back.
Absolutely. Now, Steve, I can't let this go without comment. And the three of us, we love Sean Sullivan like a brother, like a brother. He's been great to Joe Bucks fan, and we do our best for him. I consider him a draft guru because he puts a lot of work into it. Steve, this Cam Newton notion, you know, Sullivan likes shiny objects, Steve. Cam Newton, I mean, come on now, Cam Newton on the Buccaneers. They got all their chips in with Brady. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Ira, and, open your mind, baby, open your mind. Cam Newton can play running back. Just he's going to carry the ball. No matter where he plays, he's going to probably carry the ball. Just tell Cam we're going to get you eight rushes a game. Some of those will be option plays. And get rid of Ryan Griffin. Cam Newton might be the best running back in the National Football League. I'm all for it.
Steve, that is a brilliant analysis, except for one thing. Newton doesn't run the ball anymore. We haven't seen him do it in 2 or 3 years. It's one of the reasons he's still out there and hasn't been signed. If he was still the mobile Cam Newton that we know and love as the former MVP, the guy would have got a $30 million contract. He'd be playing somewhere. So, Steve, I love you supporting Sean Sullivan on this one.
No, I'm not. If his foot's healthy, Ira, he'll only get a job if his foot's healthy. And if his foot's healthy,
well,
he can run.
His shoulder, Steve, he's had shoulder problems too. And you want to give him the ball and run him between the tackles behind Tristan Wirfs. I don't think that's going to work, Steven. You may continue.
All right, Sage. All right. Now, Ira, you wrote a column about Tom Brady, sort of with your numbers that you threw out there. In many ways, you made the case that there is no argument. He is the greatest in NFL history. 30 playoff wins. Joe Montana is next with 16. Some might say case closed. What do you want to say about your column, Ira?
Well, I think the important note to mention is that while a lot of things have to go right for a team like the Bucks, which is unfamiliar with postseason territory, a lot of things have to go right. They got to find a kicker to make a damn kick when it counts. They got to run the ball better, and they got to protect Brady. But, you know, they got a lot of things going for them. But if they do make it, and at least 7 out of 16, you know, I don't have to get a 98 on the math regions to know that's a pretty high percentage, damn close to 50% of NFC and AFC teams will make the postseason. And the main point of my article is if the Bucks get there, and it will be a colossal disappointment if they don't by any standards, I think the only thing that could put an asterisk on that is a serious injury to Brady. But if Brady is not seriously hurt, and they don't make the playoffs, that is a major flop. No ifs, ands, or buts. But if they make it, I think they'd be very dangerous. That's one of the reasons that the Super Bowl odds are rather short for a team that's been irrelevant for a dozen years. Lee, if they're playing past January 3rd, I wouldn't count the Bucks out, given Brady's pedigree. Now, look, he doesn't have Belichick coaching him. He doesn't have the mystique of Foxborough. But he's won a lot of postseason games on the road. And the only times he really gets stopped is when he gets beat up by teams like the Ravens and the Giants in the Super Bowl.
Eagles.
You know, Eagles didn't give him time to throw. But, you know, he is a master and gets better as the season goes on. So I wrote that for Buck fans wondering, hey, what are the real chances of this team doing some damage? I think if they get there, they can do a lot of damage.
The stat nerds at ESPN have come to the conclusion, after I don't know how many software programs they've run, the Bucks have a 63% chance of making the playoffs. And they predict.
Wow.
9 wins.
So you're thinking they got them as a wild card, Lee. That's what
I
it
guess,
looks
yeah,
like.
9 wins, yeah. Yeah.
I tell you what, I mean, the Saints are solid. You know,
yeah.
Steve agrees, they are solid. I don't think San Francisco is going to take a step back whatsoever. They are the most physical team in football. And I sure, you know, and I give John Lynch a lot of the credit because the guys that he picks up fit a certain mold and everybody blocks for that running game and it doesn't matter who's running the ball. Boy, that is impressive. And, of course, their defense is outstanding. It's not going to be easy to climb atop, you know, climb atop that NFC ladder, but Brady gives them a chance.
Ira, you don't need me to confirm that the Saints are a good team. Come on now.
Hey, here's one for you. You're talking about Lynch is building something in San Francisco, and it's sort of in his image, you know, a very physical team, a rough team. And I want your feedback on this. You know, you've heard this cliche, a team resembles the personality of its coach.
Yep.
And Ryan Jensen, a couple weeks ago, was on a podcast. Well, one of the stories he told was, you know, they asked him about, hey, you're supposed to be nasty. Jason Light always describes it as nasty. Light always cracks a smile when he says that, you know. Nasty is kind of like a step away from being dirty. You want nasty. Jensen talked about, you know, he had to have that kind of edge. And he thought it started in college because he was a D2 guy. And he was a 6'2 or 6'3, 230-pound lineman. And he carried it over in the NFL. Well, in the NFL, his first day of practice in minicamp with the Ravens, he was sixth-round pick. He got into a wrestling match with a linebacker. Jensen said John Harbaugh started screaming at him. Knock it off. We don't have time for this spit. That's a Steve Fumig line. We don't have time for this spit. If you're going to kick his ass, kick his ass. 3 plays later, the same linebacker he thought had a dirty shot on him, and he remembered Harbaugh's words, and he body slammed the dude, and they had a huge fight. And ever since then, he thought, you know what? That's the way I'm going to have to play in the NFL. But that was on the encouragement of Harbaugh. We don't have time for wrestling. If you're going to kick his ass, kick his ass. Well, Jensen, 3 plays later, kicked his ass. And we all know the Ravens are a very physical team, very physical, have been. And you know what? The Ravens, more often than not, are one of the best teams in the league. Coincidence? I don't think so.
You know, Lee makes a very good point, Steve, in terms of I think the Ravens are the AFC's answer to the 49ers. The Bucks, on the other hand, and I got to say this, even in the glory days, the great Brooks, Zapp, Barber, Rice, I don't think they were overly physical. I mean, they were fast. They swarmed. They never loafed. They were smart. But I don't remember people describing even the 0-2 Bucks as overly physical. But the Ravens have the reputation, and now the Niners are developing that. Steve, speaking about Jensen, I think it was one of Jason Light's better free agent pickups. At the time, they made him the highest paid center in the league. I didn't think he lived up to it in 2018. I thought he took a step up last year, and I thought he was Tampa Bay's best offensive lineman. And Steve, may I add?
I got a question for you, Ira. First, before you
go on. Go ahead. Fire away, baby.
When you say he's one of Jason Light's better free agent pickups, that doesn't mean he's a good player. You know, that I don't understand. You know, that's like a weird analogy there, Ira, because I mean, Jason Light's free agents haven't been that great overall, but Jensen, he wasn't good as the top paid center in the NFL 2018, and last year. Come on. I mean, is he really that much more than average? Really? Maybe a little shade better?
I thought he was the Bucs' best offensive lineman in 2019. Whether that's a reflection of Smith and Marpet and Kappa and Dotson, you decide. But I thought he was the best player on that offensive line. And speaking of that, today we got to speak to an offensive lineman from the Bucs on Zoom. And
Ollie?
You know what kills me? Tell me where I'm wrong here, guys. Steve doesn't need any encouragement in that area. you know, and somebody asked the question about the O-line and his thoughts about it, and I've had many conversations with Marpet in the locker room, and he never wavers, and he's not the only guy that thinks this. Nobody ever says out of those offensive linemen on Tampa Bay, None of them ever say, we got to do better. We're not doing a good job. Well, Winston was sacked 47 times. The running game stunk. Is it all on the offensive line? No, but they got to take their fair share, if not the bulk of the blame. And you never hear Smith, Marpet, Jensen. Now, I'm going to excuse Kappa. The only guy who might have said a few things was Dotson. But, Steve, where is the acknowledgement that they have not produced? There's a lot of money tied up on that offensive line. They have not produced. And we'll see if the addition of Wirfs and Gronkowski up front can turn things around. But that is a concern for me going into 2020.
Well, I've got to say this, because Lee brought up earlier that teams sometimes reflect their head coach and their leadership. And I'll say this, Ira. First, maybe the offensive linemen just think that the running backs suck, so there's that. And number two, you know what? Do you ever hear Bruce Arians say, we're not scheming the run game at all? I watch San Francisco on tape, and they're scheming runs left and right, and we're not doing a good job with that. I don't hear that from up above. I don't think that's Arians' way. I don't think that trickles down, really. And the O-line, I think that they're just not wired in that mindset. Maybe Brady will get them there if you think it's healthy.
Maybe you're right. Lee, in the words of John Gruden, you know what swagger is? Knock somebody on their ass. That's swagger. And the Bucs don't do it nearly often enough up front. Lee, they just don't do it.
I don't think they're a bad offensive line. I guess my standard of an offensive line is thoroughly different than 90% of the people watching football.
What about the 47 sacks, Lee? 47 sacks.
Well, I mean, we knew that was going to happen. When you, Bruce Arians' offense, the quarterback gets the hell beat out of it because it's a long developing, long, you know, deep throw. He got run out of Pittsburgh by Art Rooney II because he was tired of seeing Ben Roethlisberger get beat up. And you and I both know, Ira, I've never heard anybody complain about Pittsburgh's offensive line. And Roethlisberger's getting pounded on and pounded on. And they finally said, this guy's not going to be able to play in a couple of years. We got a major investment here. And they got rid of Arians because they thought Roethlisberger was getting beat up so much. And like I said, I've never heard anybody say Pittsburgh's offensive line was bad. So we knew this coming in. You know, Carson Palmer got pounded on pretty well at Arizona, running Arians' offense. So this shouldn't be a shock. It wasn't a shock to me. And we all know that Jameis, he got Bob Gibson wind up, you know. So he doesn't get the ball out quick. So at least I was not surprised by all those hits and sacks. I was not.
Gentlemen, it leads to a natural question, gentlemen, which is it an incumbent on Mr. Arians, Mr. Leftwich, Mr. Goodwin to change this philosophy? Because a 43-year-old quarterback who is not known for his mobility, Steve, do you really want him taking a lot of hits?
Well, Brady's not going to take a lot of hits. He led the league in throwaways last year, and if he has to do that again, he will. You know, he's smart enough to not set himself up for that. You know, they'll they've said 100 times he'll be part of the game plans and establishing what he likes within the offense. So I think that'll work itself out. I'm with Lee. I don't think the offensive line is that bad. I just don't think any one of them independently is anywhere near the Pro Bowl conversation, including Jensen. And hopefully that changes this year, though. If somebody steps up.
I'm with you on that, Steve. I'm with you.
Yeah, I'm with Steve, although I thought Jensen had a really good year last year. But I'm with you overall, Steve. Yeah, they have it's an average offensive line, and none of the guys, with the possible exception of Jensen, you would ever suggest that they're Pro Bowl material.
Sage, I got to run this by you because it was fascinating. You know, Gil Brandt, he's 87 years old. You went to high school with him back in Brooklyn, and he is the architect of the old Cowboys dynasty. He still works regularly for the NFL. And
man's got a bust in Canton, Steve. He's got a bust in Canton.
Hall of Famer now, and busy with the Combine, and he's on Sirius XM NFL Radio. And his insight isn't what it used to be as far as the radio presentation, but I thought he dropped a gem the other night when he talked about Brady. And of course, you know, Gil Brandt, he's dropping things like, well, I remember when we brought in Forrest Gregg and Mike Ditka, and they were big names from other teams. And even though they didn't have their fastball, and he was talking about their impact anyway, but he basically said, when Brady arrives, the Buccaneers, they won't realize that he's not the same Brady that he used to be and that he's, you know, maybe not as good as he was now that he's 43. They won't know that. They'll just think this is what Tom Brady looks like, and they'll buy in even deeper because they just don't have any frame of reference to what he used to be, and that it will really help. And he said, you know, going back a million years ago, it really helped those Cowboys to bring in the old veterans. He said, as long as they really busted their ass.
Well, that's candid talk, but Lee, there's a huge difference, a chasm between the Bucs bringing in Brady, throwing all their chips in, and the 71 Cowboys adding Mike Ditka, and I believe they added Lance Allworth, who was towards the end of his career. But Lee, my point was those were bit players on a great Dallas team, role players.
Who was the cornerback for the Packers? Wasn't he a bit player?
Herb Adderley. That's another great one. And by the way, that 71 Dallas team, I think it's very underappreciated. That's the one that crushed Miami the year before Miami had the perfect season. That was a tremendous Cowboys team. And they were, you know, after so many postseason disappointments, they were due for a win. And, of course, they had that terrible loss to Baltimore in the worst Super Bowl ever, Super Bowl V. That game stunk. And people were wondering if Landry was ever going to win the big one. Anyway, Lee, it's not comparable. Tom Brady is supposed to be the lead actor, the lead figure. The other people are supporting guys. You know, if it was a movie, a guy'd be in it for about 6 minutes, and he'd have two lines of dialogue. Now, Brandt can be candid, and I'd give him that. At his age and his stature, he's not worried about repercussions about something he said. And he called Brady a descending player.
Interesting, Ira. The NFL has these next-gen stats, which are not influenced by humans. It's strictly the technology and the balls and the uniforms and the satellite readings and all that stuff. And they broke down the best deep ball throwers in the NFL through their metrics, which I'm not going to lay out here now, but it's strictly off the technology. Tom Brady, fifth in the NFL last year, ranked as a deep ball thrower. Jameis Winston was not in the top 10.
It's funny you mentioned fifth as a deep ball thrower because he finished number five in passes 20 yards or longer. And I think that's a little surprising because we looked at Brady last year, no Gronkowski, no receivers of note, and, you know, dumping the ball off to the backs. Yet he had 60 passes completed of 20 yards or more, and that's a strong number. And he didn't have Godwin and Evans, so I think that's a bonus for Tampa Bay going forward.
Real quick, Ira, you mentioned Patriots receivers. Brady didn't have any. Adam Schein said on one of his recent broadcasts that whenever he hears someone mention Edelman as a Hall of Fame candidate, he said he physically gets ill.
You know, Steve, one thing you mentioned that I want to get back to, because you kind of dismissed it a little bit, is I inferred that Arians has to be flexible in his offensive philosophy, working with Leftwich, in terms of the point that Lee made. Arians' inclination is for long developing plays that strike well down the field. Brady's strengths are getting the ball out quickly, going through his progressions faster than anybody maybe that's ever played the game. So, Steve, doesn't something have to give in that regard in terms of play call?
I think what's going to give is the feedback from Brady. That's part of why I'm a little concerned about what happens early. I mean, he's only human without the offseason, and he'll play a little bit in preseason. I was actually digging out all the data on that. I'm sure he'll play a little bit. He's actually played in some week ones, though not in the last couple of years. But, you know, for him to get a feel of the offense, if it takes four games, that could be the difference between winning the division and battling for a wild card. And, you know, it's still a 43-year-old quarterback. Well, you don't want to wait till 44 years old. So I'm with you. If they adjust, I think the adjustments in part will come from the feedback they get from Brady.
I think you're right, and Lee, I've made this point before. I think it's an important one. Brady didn't just land on Arians' lap. He was targeted. He was pursued. He was the man behind door number two And who said it? Bruce Arians. And when did he say it? February, right away, weeks before free agency. So, Lee, if the guy's going to target Tom Brady, who's got 20 years of tape and a 20-year legacy unlike anybody else that's ever played the game, Lee, it's natural to think that you're going to do everything you can to accentuate what Tom Brady does well.
You would think so, and you would hope so. You and I both agree, Ira. Don Shula may be the most underrated coach there is because he was so flexible in what he taught, what he coached, and what he did. It was all about what talent he had available, and that's the mark of a good coach.
Yeah, Ira, I still think it's historic what John Fox did years ago with Tim Tebow, and when he changed the whole offense midstream to accommodate Tebow, they got in the playoffs, they won a playoff game. I mean, coaches have done it before. I'm not saying Tom Brady's Tim Tebow, but you know, they can get this going quickly.
It's a good example, Steve. Good example.
I wanted to float something. Yeah, I figured I'd give something that was still in this century. So, Ira, listen.
Hey, Shula was in this century, wasn't he?
No, he hasn't coached, 25 years, I guess?
1996? I think it was 96, something like that.
So, Sage, look, talking about getting things going early, see if you buy my theory here, Ira. Tell me where I'm wrong. Week 2, the Buccaneers host Carolina. And I'm going to say it right now. I think that's the biggest game on the schedule. And I'll tell you why. Because no matter what happens week 1, it's acceptable. If they win, great. If they lose to New Orleans, all right. You know, you're going on the road there week 1. But no matter what happens, you have to beat Carolina week 2 or you are just not the team you think you are. And if you go 0-2 in the division, you might as well kiss the division goodbye. And I just think that week 2 game, it's basically the Super Bowl for this season because there's no excuse you can make for losing that game. And it'll just be critical on so many levels, especially for the confidence of the team. And the Buccaneers brass keeps telling us how important this confidence and this new raised Tom Brady era is going to be. I just think that could be the whole season right there.
You talk about a deflategate, Lee. That's the ultimate deflategate. Look, I don't think Buck fans are too worried, Lee, about losing at home against Carolina. Now, look, the Bucs have a history of not taking advantage of their home field. There's no question about it. It goes back a long, long way. They haven't had a winning record at home, I believe, since Chucky was prowling the sidelines. I mean, that's ridiculous.
That's true.
But having said that, most people have Carolina winning 4 games, Lee. That might be charitable. I think they're in full rebuild mode. They got a new owner. He's going to be patient and try to restructure this thing. Keekly's gone. He's the defensive leader over there. They don't have a lot. They got McCaffrey. And what's funny about McCaffrey is the Bucs did the best job on him by far than any team in the league last year. They played him twice, and he was zero factor. Zero. Catching the ball, running the ball. They did a tremendous job on McCaffrey. I got to give Bowles credit. He targeted him, whether he had a spy on him. Whatever the heck Bowles did, it worked to perfection. That is not a good football team, Lee. If Atlanta is an average team, Carolina is a well below average team. Buck fans, they don't even want to think of the possibility of losing to Carolina. However, gentlemen, didn't they just blow a big halftime lead against a woeful Giants team early in the season at home with a rookie quarterback? And the Giants didn't have much behind Barkley. Not a very good team.
And that was the end of the season right there in many ways.
Yeah.
Well said, Steve. Well said. Although I think they went to L.A. the next week and won. But, yeah, that was a crippling loss. Steve, you're right. They lose to New Orleans. Even if they lose by 2 touchdowns,
that's okay.
You shake it off. Yeah, you shake it off and it's okay.
Well, I really can't point to a week 2 game as a must win. I mean, my gosh, how many times have the Saints gone 0-2 and won the division?
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's easy, but there's no way I can point to a week 2 game and say that's a must win. However, here's the big however, here's the but. It would be an embarrassing loss, probably more so than the Giants. And the reason why that is, here is a season, no OTAs, It doesn't look like there's going to be a mini camp, although there's rumors out there they may have a June mini camp. Training camp is up in the air. Everything is virtual. I mean, just today, Ali Marpet was talking about, he doesn't know Wirfs yet. He's only talked to him and texted to him. He's really never met him, doesn't know anything about him. And here it is, almost June. Carolina's got a new coaching staff, new quarterback, although the offensive coordinator quarterback do have a history with each other. That would be horribly embarrassing for the Bucs. And here are the Bucs are, and they beat their chest. Oh, we got a great coaching staff, and these guys can teach. And if you get shamed by a brand new coaching staff with a college coach as a head coach on top of it, wasn't even in the league last year or last few years, new quarterback, new everything, and they beat you at home in the second week when you have all this coaching staff that you brag about so much, beat your chest like Tarzan, howling in the jungle, and then you got Tom Brady, 43-year-old quarterback, the veteran who's going to lead this team out of the abyss. That everything you've talked about all of season long is complete and utter total trash then.
Yes, and you also have a legacy that is not to be proud of, and Steve points it out all the time, of early season woes. They always shoot themselves in the foot. Steve, how many years in a row have they been 3-5 at the midpoint?
7 years in a row, 3-5 or worse at the midpoint.
Or worse.
That,
wow.
I agree with Lee. I mean, there are so many layers to that Carolina game. And, Ira, you know, I'm not scared of Carolina, but they got a lot of defensive talent, and they loaded up at receiver. They loaded up at receiver in free agency, and they...
Didn't they draft 7 defensive players?
Yeah.
I think they did.
Yeah. They had a hell of a draft.
They're a very interesting team, especially you get them in week 2, and there's not a lot of tape on them yet. You know, they stopped McCaffrey last time, but who knows what this offense is going to look like. You know, I've got everything riding on that game, including my advanced wagers, Ira, so I'm tense. All right, Sage, I want to run a couple of quickies past you, and then we're going to get out of here. First, I want to remind everybody, the podcast is available. Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Google Play, listen to it, subscribe, you'll get an alert when it posts, and you can listen to JoeBucksFan.com, Stitcher, a lot of different ways to do it. You can follow Ira on Twitter, iKaufman76. If you don't know how to spell Kaufman, shame on you. And, of course, we're so appreciative to Big Storm Beer, where Ira is going to be drinking heavily all year long, Tropic Pressure, to soothe his nerves as he sits by the pool and enjoys this Buccaneers season. Tropic Pressure Florida Ale is Ira's favorite. Ira will be watching games with you, the fans. Schedule will be coming out where he's going to be at the Big Storm Tap Rooms in Odessa and 49th Street. Great food, great fun. We have some surprises we're working on, as well as prizes that Ira will be giving away every time this year. So we're really excited to get that going once everything gets full speed at these fantastic locations like Big Storm Brewery in Odessa and in Clearwater. Ira, now listen, I got to run this one past you, and we've got plenty more. We're going to try to squeeze in a third podcast this week after Todd Bowles talks to the media on Thursday. So we, there should be some gems there, and we need your sage wisdom to take us into the weekend on that. Ira, got to run this by you. Vincent Jackson, if you guys, from a media perspective, I think both of you would say that Vincent Jackson, very close to the vest, never says anything remotely negative. He's a player's guy. You know, he's just corporate guy all the way, sort of boring. Well, would you guys agree?
Boring, but intelligent.
Intelligent.
It's intelligent. Yeah.
I don't know if I would go boring, but he was very close to the vest. I got along with him really, really well. But it was almost a game. Like, he would only talk one day, and that one day was usually only for a couple minutes. And he loved cliche answers. Like, he already had his answers worked out, whether he did that with the Bucs PR staff or not. But you could tell they were already rehearsed. And as he's walking away, you'd nod at each other and smile like, yeah, I know what you're doing. Oh, yeah, thanks. I'm glad you know.
Well, Sage, Vincent Jackson, I caught him on WFAN Radio in New York last week, and he was promoting a Memorial Day event that he was involved in, and, you know, he's very close to the military and his efforts there, a great philanthropist in Tampa. Anyway, Vincent Jackson's asked about Jameis Winston and what went wrong. They asked him what didn't click with Jameis. And Vincent Jackson, he basically says flat out that, you know what, Jameis just never learned. You know, he fights. He had so much pressure on him because as a number one pick and coming in, and he's so competitive that he just fights so hard every down. He just never learned how to give up on second down or third down and live to play another day. Just he never figured it out. He said so many other guys have wanted to be elite out of the gate and just couldn't calm down, and it's tough to do. And for Vincent Jackson to just say, look, the guy just couldn't figure it out, I thought that was pretty strong.
That is pretty strong. I think he's saying what the majority of Buck fans have summed up about Jameis Winston. He never got rule number one. First, do no harm. He thought he could make every throw. You know my theory. This goes back to particular that second year at FSU when they were so much better than 90% of the teams they were playing, and they'd fall behind by 10 at the half and win the game by 20. And nobody remember Winston's bad first half with his gas because they had superior talent. That doesn't work in the NFL. Doesn't work. And he never learned that. And 5 years is a long time to be an apprentice and try to figure that out. I think every Buccaneer wishes the best for Jameis Winston. I don't think any of them have anything personal against Jameis Winston, except for the fact most of them think that they were a playoff team last year if Winston played a little smarter. So I give Jackson credit. It might be an obvious point, but he said it, Lee. He said it. And I think at the end of the season, Bruce Arians came to the same conclusion.
You can make an argument that the curve started going downwards on Jameis when Jackson left. And they bring in DeSean Jackson and all hell broke loose. He swags. Vincent Jackson loved Jameis. I mean, they were tight. And Jameis played good ball when Vincent Jackson around. Maybe Jackson was one of those guys like, calm down, Jameis, calm down. I think all of us saw with our own eyes how there were games, especially home games. Jameis' home game record was rotten. He did pretty well on the road, but home game was horrible. He would get so freaking hyped up that he was a mess. And he admitted one time that he wants to win at home so much because of the fans. And he all but said, he didn't say this, but you can see the next step was there's a lot of pressure on me to win home games. He didn't say that, but he said, you know, he wants to win so bad with fans at home games. And he just got himself too psyched out. He was so hyped up. And maybe Jackson was a calming influence for him. And once Jackson left, that calming influence was no longer there. A calming influence from a longtime veteran who was an elite receiver.
Interesting point. You know, it's really remarkable when you think that he played 8 road games last year. None of them in London. 8 road games in NFL stadiums. And he threw 6 picks in those 8 games. I mean, just think about that. If he could have maintained anything close to that percentage in home games. Now, one of them was in London, which was a disaster. I understand it. But 6 picks in 8 road games. Steve, not only is there nothing wrong with that, that's pretty darn good.
Sure, sure. Of course, Ira. I just thought that was interesting from VJax, who actually said in that interview that he thinks when eventually Jameis does get a chance to get in a real quarterback competition in a training camp, whether that's next year or the year after, that he wouldn't bet against Jameis. He thinks he's an NFL starter, just not a very good one right now. Ira, Hall of Fame, I'm trying to figure you guys out. I don't know what's going on with the Hall of Fame. So I wanted to run this little trivia question past you and see if you think this guy also might factor into some of the Bucks-related stuff. But I wanted to run this past you because there's some steam for this guy, which I think you're going to be feeling later. One of the greatest Pro Bowl snubs in NFL history, and we'll see if you guys who know who this is, one of the greatest NFL Pro Bowl snubs in history, 2006, this man had 10 interceptions, led the NFL in passes defensed with 24, and did not make the Pro Bowl. Who is that guy?
Well, it could be Brian Kelly. I believe Rondé had 10 picks, but it wasn't 2006. I'm going to say Brian Kelly.
Ira, this was Asante Samuel.
I thought you said he was a Buccaneer.
No, I said it could be saying. Could be connected to Bucks Hall of Fame related.
Okay.
Stuff.
All right.
I confused you. But 10 picks, 24 passes defense, no Pro Bowl. Now then the guy goes on to have 2 picks in the playoffs on top of that. And to finish off with Asante Samuel, he got screwed that year, but he made 4 more Pro Bowls. He ended up with 2 Super Bowl rings. And he had 7 picks in 20 playoff games and ended up 51 interceptions, which is 32nd all-time, among the very best in the modern era, one behind Champ Bailey and 2 back of Deion Sanders. There's a movement for this guy, Ira, and do you think he might be somebody who is just being overlooked and could eventually threaten a Rondé Barber candidacy?
I'll tell you what, from what you just described, Steve, you could make a compelling presentation. For the man. He was an outstanding cornerback for the Pats, and he had tremendous ball skills. I mean, if he was close to the ball, he had it in his hands. He didn't tip it. He didn't drop it. And that's a skill all of its own, which we have not seen much around these parts, by the way, for years and years and years. I'm not sure what year he retired, Steve, but I'm sure he's eligible for the Hall. He got to be retired 5 years. And I got to think he retired before 2015. But you don't hear his name. Steve, now, a compatriot, so to speak, Ty Law, just got in a couple of years ago. And he had that great playoff run, Ty Law, when he was beating up on those Colt receivers, Harrison and Wayne, and getting away with it in the early 2000s. That was very key to New England beating the Colts in those great Manning-Brady games early. So here comes Samuel. I got to look at him a little more closely. But first, let's handle Rondé, gentlemen, because it is an absolute travesty, and I don't use that word lightly, that the man can't even be one of the 15 finalists. Get him in the room. Let me do my work. And I think you'd be pleased with the results.
Well, as Lee always says, Ira, there's that Northeast bias that's in that Hall of Fame room. And if Samuel gets close, you got guys voting. He played for Philadelphia. He played for the Patriots. He went to the NFC title game as a starter for the Falcons. So I'm scared. I'm worried about Rondé, Ira. All right, you know what? I know you want to eat, Ira, so get the hell out of here. Lee, do you have a final thing to say to Ira? I'm going to let Lee send you out of here, Ira.
Ira, you no longer eat your lunch when you log on to Zoom.
You know,
for the sake of humanity.
When I go on with Todd Bowles tomorrow afternoon, I will finish my matzo ball soup before the Zoom meeting starts. For all concerned, out of sympathy for all concerned.
Always remember, when you're on Zoom, the second you log in, everybody can see what you're doing.
I thought you don't have to be on video. Do you have to be on video?
There's a way around it. It's like 2 or 3 extra steps.
So, Ira, wear a shirt next time, okay? Get out of here.